You're listening to Tech Recruit, a podcast that educates talent acquisition and recruitment professionals on innovation to attract talent across all industries. We're glad you're here.
Get us started. Welcome to the Talent Analytics Show. My name is Stacey Broadwell. I will be your host for today, and we're very excited to be joined with our guest, who is Michael Moon. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you very much, Stacey. I'm very excited to be here.
So you have a very exciting role and in a career path that you've taken to get there. Tell us a little bit about what it is that you do.
All right. So recently I was with ADP. I ran a consulting team or team of subject matter experts who helped shape the roadmap for our analytics product. But my prior life, I was an HR practitioner. I worked in HR as well as HR technology and fell into that reporting space early on in my career, being a lover of data and process and logic, and quickly said, wait a minute, why are you using the numbers to do that? And I said, no, you're not doing it the right way. And so I started to realize that there was a need for people in HR that actually understood what motivates people in the workplace, what drives them, how do you actually measure the intangible value of people inside the organization, and how do you make these decisions about people using data rather than using your gut? So, like I said, left ADP. I have my own company, consulting firm, called Accelerate Research and Advisory. And so I serve both HR technology vendors and organizations. And then I also am an associate professor at Columbia University.
A lot going on there. Very exciting. So what is it that we're going to be talking about today?
Today, I'm going to talk about, I hope that it will be a nice thread, but I really want to talk about how the current state of the workplace, and I call it post-COVID, even though technically we're still in COVID, but what is going on, right, that we need to be thinking about in terms of how we measure people in the workplace and how we're monitoring them. So it's at a cross-section between talent analytics and technology that's currently being used to try and assess levels of productivity and collaboration. So I'm going to talk about the intersection of those two things and what I call how to use some of these technologies for good and not for evil, and why it's important, besides the obvious, why it's important for us to use this software that's available and the measures that are available in these software to do right by our employees, as opposed to use them for more punitive means. So I'm going to talk about that, and then I'm going to talk about what is it that's changing what people in analytics needs to focus on now, and honestly, what we probably should have been focusing on before, but with COVID and other things that are going on, both around the globe as well as in the United States, now is really the time for us to focus on this new way of looking at measuring people inside of our organization.
It's such, it can be like a very polarizing conversation, right? Because in one way, you might be thinking, it's like ethically, is it okay to monitor your employees and look at what it is that they're doing, tracking their keyboard strokes? Or, we did an example a couple weeks ago on the Talent Analytics Show with ski resorts who were putting trackers on the snowcats and the amount of space and land that the snowcat drivers actually covered, and then they would show them the results on this dashboard and then either put them in training. And so for the employee, that could either feel one punitive, like you mentioned, or it can feel very like a coaching, like, great, thank you, I can improve. And so how do you actually do that successfully? So this is a really, really hot topic right now, right?
Yeah, and it should be a more supportive way that we're using the software, but it doesn't mean that you throw out its use for monitoring productivity or understanding the performance of employees. It's about what you do with that data that matters more.
Yeah. Okay, fantastic. Well, I'll go ahead and turn it over to you. And if anybody has any questions, if you want to put that in the chat. Hey there, Frank. Like to say hello to all my regulars who are joining us weekly. And we'll go ahead and get started.
Right. Press my keys here. Trying to get into presentation mode. All right, let's try it one more time. All right. So with the rest of the world, we watched in disbelief as COVID-19 pandemic took hold at the beginning of 2020. And life as we know it changed. Right? And then in March, more than a third of humanity was in lockdown. And by the end of April, almost 1.6 billion workers stood in immediate danger of having their livelihoods destroyed. We have seen the speed and scale of change continue to accelerate with technological advances, bringing bigger and bolder changes in shorter windows of time. We are in what we call a hyper VUCA world. So VUCA is, I always mess up the acronyms, volatile, uncertain, and I forget the last two, but the idea that things are constantly evolving and changing and we're having to adapt, right? As individuals, as organizations. And what we're also finding is that because of the things that are going on in the world, that those things are actually being forced to go faster, right? So we're accelerating pre-existing disruptions and interruptions that are becoming normalized. Luckily, I'm in a hotel room today. There's no cat that's going to go across my screen. But I think, you know, if we think about where we were just, you know, 9 months ago, how that would have made you feel. And now we're just like, it is what it is. Right? So as I've said, the pandemic is really accelerating the way we're thinking about our workers. It's shifting our priorities. And we're starting to think about the ways in which technology can help facilitate the employee experience. But also, there are some things that we need to think about in terms of how it actually can deter the employee experience. And we're going to be talking about that a little bit later in my talk here. So as organizations are forced to respond to crises like COVID and demonstrations of racial injustice in the United States that we're all very aware of, the employee experience is going to be impacted. Levels of stress are definitely higher. More demands are being put on individuals. And this also means that people analytics actually has a role to play, and that role has to change from what we've historically focused on. And so I'm going to go through this little image here. I'm sure some of us have seen these analogies before, right? When we talk about the fact that, you know, people analytics is typically looking at data from the past, trying to then generate insight to understand, well, why did it happen? What might we do differently? Right, to also going into foresight. So predictive analytics, you know, what might happen? So again, using past data to understand what might happen in the future. However, we really need to change the way we're looking at people analytics and actually start to pay attention. So instead of focusing more on just the past and on the future, we need to stop and pay more attention to the now. So that's why I call this a concept called NowSight. So this means that we have to spend more time understanding what is happening right now in our workplaces to our employees. How are they thinking? How are they feeling? How are things impacting them? How is it impacting productivity? How is it impacting social capital inside of an organization? The pandemic, not that I'm going to tell you anything you don't already know, it's put more hours into our working day, creating exhaustion and burnout. And burnout is the enemy for employee engagement. And simultaneously, we're exposing stress that many workers face in trying to balance their professional and personal demands as personal commitments and roles, such as being a parent or caregiver, coincide with also having to be a stay-at-home parent in a classroom and also having to make your meetings, right? There's a lot more pressures that we all have on us in this environment. And we're also missing out on a lot of the things that we are used to, like the corridor chit chat. So the opportunity to just, you know, check in on people and, you know, and build and nurture our social capital. But what we've seen is that a lot of organizations have responded to that by having you, I don't know how many of you, raise your hand, right? How many of you are would say that you are, have many more meetings on your calendar than you did before, right? So we, organizations are feeling this pressure that, okay, our employees aren't physically here, so how do we make sure they're actually working? Okay, well, let's just make sure we do lots of frequent check-ins, and we'll, you know, we'll have a team call every day. And like, I don't know how many of this is sound like your life right now, but what we're seeing is an increase in the number of hours that people are working, the number of meetings that people are required to be in. And normally, if you're like me, whatever happened to me was I couldn't do my work during the day. Right? I do all my meetings, and then at night I'd work. Right? So that is really having an impact on our workforce. But let's just take a stop for a second and kind of think about, you know, this renewed focus that COVID specifically, right, has had on the role that analytics can play, right? So for different organizations are in different phases, right? Some, we all had to stop and respond earlier this year and may still be doing some responding depending upon the nature of your business and what part of the world you're in. And then many of us started to bring back our workers or re-engage them, either just re-engaging them after, like, now we've got your technology, we've got VPN set up, we've got bandwidth, we've got that controlled, we've set expectations. And in some cases, actually, where we have workers who actually started coming back to the workplace that weren't there before, or maybe they were furloughed and now they're been brought back to work again. This means we now have to think about, we're never going to go back to the way things were before. We have to start to think about what is the workplace of the future look like now that we know what we know. So let me walk a little bit through kind of how analytics has helped, it has helped in some of these areas and will be able to help in the coming coming months and years. So as the organizations quickly try to respond and react to the growing impact of COVID-19 on both their workers and their organization, there was an immediate need to take stock of how best to react to the pandemic. And they needed to be, HR leaders and people analytics practitioners need to be able to produce, need to stop what they were doing. Predictive analytics, who cares? Let's stop and figure out, where are our employees? So basic understanding of where do they exist? How many employees are in each location, and can you overlay, you know, infection rates on top of that? So just really taking stock of where employees were. Even something as simple as is doing, creating a dashboard, running a report to understand how many of your employees are missing emergency contact information, right? Something we probably should have done before this, but now we know why it's so incredibly important. What we were also finding, I talked earlier about, you know, the number of hours we're working. Think about the, you know, how many of us, even if we could take vacation, because we're with too many meetings, right, too much going on, and then we got our kids are in school and, you know, all these other things. Even if we could take vacation, where would we go, right? So what organizations are finding is that employees aren't taking their vacation, right? So taking, you know, being able to assess, right, if you don't take that time off, right, obviously that's going to contribute to stress and burnout. So being able to better understand, not only in, obviously how it impacts individual employees, but that's also a financial obligation to the company to be able to monitor and understand and then find ways to encourage and promote us and promote the acceptance of employees just shutting down, right? Again, we should have been doing this before, but now it's even more important. So that's the kind of some of the ways in which we, these are really metrics, not so much analytics. As we start to move into this re-engage phase, this is where I see people analytics needing to really shift, right? And think about how people are, where are they now? How is their health, right? Being able to understand not just, so I have this little grid here that I created. So understanding these personas of the people that are able to return and the people who want to return, and then identifying and using surveys, as, you know, you do a quick little, you know, Survey Monkey, or you can use a vendor, but something very quick, hope potentially like on a mobile device that allows you to quickly understand how the circumstances of your employee population, so that you can start to come up with the solutions, the appropriate solutions, or, you know, relevant solutions to help support those employees. You know, so if it's an employee that really wants to return to work but they can't, right, maybe you can dig in a little deeper and understand for those people, what are the primary reasons that they can't. Most likely it's childcare, It could be their high risk, right? So understanding that and using analytics to understand how people are thinking and feeling right now can help you better create those programs, policies, and guide you to building things that are going to be really helpful employees during this time. So that's that one. So then we move on to reimagine, right? This is where we've going to spend a little bit of time talking about this toward the end as well. This idea of reimagining the workforce. Now, I have so many more things we could possibly be thinking here, but I'm just going to touch on a few, right? So being able to understand, I've always said, and if you've ever heard me speak before or read any of my research, I've always said that human capital is not the last competitive advantage. It's actually social capital, right? And again, now that we are missing some of those social connections, or even the time really to check in with each other because we are so overburdened, how do we understand the nature of what those connections are in an organization, and what are the outcomes of those connections? And we can start to use, we'll talk a little bit more about this, we start to see more use of organizational network analysis to better understand how people are communicating, how they are collaborating, which we'll talk about the difference between the two in the next couple of slides. So really thinking about how do we reimagine the workforce by better understanding how people are connected to one another, and then be able to efficiently identify the right people and combine the right people. So that's definitely an area where, again, we were seeing a trend in ONA probably starting about 3 or 4 years ago, as we started to see more vendors in the space that were more user-friendly and it didn't require you to have consulting resources to understand it. Now we're definitely seeing, again, this acceleration of the need for the software, not only as standalone, but also as embedded in a lot of your HCM solutions that you may be familiar with. Again, nothing new here, but really important, continuous listening strategies. So using, again, surveys or even chatter in your IMs or your social media platforms, again, not identifying actual data, but being able to aggregate that data and get an understanding and a read about how people are thinking and feeling. I won't go into a lot of detail on the recombining, but the reskilling individuals, redeploying them, right? Analytics is going to be huge in this space to be able to assess skills, to be able to assess what combination of skills and what combinations of people are going to be the most effective, team, or we're really going to see a focus on teams. If you aren't familiar with that already, we're already seeing that. So analytics focused at the team level as opposed to the what we call the meso level, rather than at the individual level, which is the micro, and continued focus at the macro level, but more so on how the aggregate impacts the business. So I want to move into, I'm going to share some of the same similar themes and data points, but I want to move into what we're starting to see also as a reaction to what's going on in the world. And I'm missing a chart. It might be on the next slide. We are using data. I can't remember the source. One of them was Gallup and one of them was, there was two different, actually it was Gallup, two different times, right? And we've seen an increase in the work from home between Gallup and Stanford University. So obviously it's not apples to apples, but the idea is that we're looking at, we've got a large enough sample size that we can infer, right, that the populations are similar, and we're seeing dramatic increase, as we would expect, right, of work from home employees. We're also seeing, this actually comes from Worklytics. Again, I don't have the source in here, but Worklytics is a vendor out there that plays in this space I'm about to talk about. And they've been able to see that there's 15% more hours that people are working each day across the data set that they looked at. And we're seeing, as I mentioned before, an increase in the number of meetings, right? Digital transformation is accelerated. This is impacting the profitability and productivity, or organizations at least think, and that's the key point, they think working from home is negatively impacting productivity and therefore profitability. And then here's the image I was looking for. And I did a quick search out on Google. I ran some analysis on search terms. I looked up EMS, which is employee monitoring software, which we're going to talk about in the next couple of slides. And I looked at productivity, and I actually overlaid the data from, I believe, December until August. I overlaid the data, and you can see in the left-hand side here, there's a spike right at the beginning of, right in the middle of March, right? And then at the end of August, right? So March, when COVID's announced, all of a sudden, right, we're worried about whether workers are going to be productive. And we're also then seeing, oh, maybe we need to think about monitoring software to measure whether or not they're being productive or not. Are they, you know, can we trust them? Are they, you know, going off on and sipping Mai Tais on the beach while, you know, their computer is sitting at home with the Google Docs open, right? So I just thought that was really interesting, because what it does is it signals that organizations, maybe they don't trust us, right? But that they believe that employee monitoring software is going to solve the problem. And we'll talk about why that is not necessarily the case. So again, employees can't be trusted. And in very interestingly, what I saw in my research was there's a new generation of employee surveillance systems. And there's surveillance systems, right? But they're now billing themselves as being productivity monitoring tools. So just buyer beware when you're looking at these vendors. And I'm happy to share. I have a whole report I wrote on this, and I have additional content. So I'm happy to share that with anybody. If you're interested in understanding the market, but also some of the players and the pros and cons, and how do you mitigate the effects of using this software? I call it, you know, using it for good and not evil. All right, so here's the negative, like the primary negative ways in which using this type of software can actually hurt people, right? So it can impact how they feel about the work that they do, about their workplace. It'll affect their attitudes, their emotions, their beliefs. The use of these systems actually in research has been linked to increased stress, health risks, job dissatisfaction among monitored employees. And one vendor, actually I think it's two, but I remember one specifically that I in my head, said, hey, you know what, this doesn't affect employees. As long as they know they're being monitored, it'll be okay. That's not the case, right? Yes, they need to know they're being monitored, right? That's important from an ethical perspective, but simply telling them they're being monitored is not going to make it less stressful, right? In fact, what a lot of research has shown is that it actually can change employee on-the-job behavior. It could actually be decrease their levels of productivity, which is counterintuitive, right? It actually can decrease what are called pro-social behaviors, which are, if you've heard the, you know, employee engagement helps increase discretionary effort. We'll call it that, right? It's the idea that you're going out of your way to do something that's not necessarily required or expected of you. Right? And if you're being watched all the time and you're worried about, did I spend enough time in front of my computer? I don't have time, right, to really help Mary out over here. I don't have time. Like normally I would just jump in and help her. I don't have time to do that, right? Which can also, which can affect relationships, right? And it can, people can become more isolated that way because they're less willing to go out and reach out to other people because it may take away from their time and ability to actually, you know, meet their productivity score for the day. And then you also see changes in negative changes of behavior that are deviant in nature. So, you know, from employees trying to trick the system, there's a really interesting article, a funny article that came out. I have it in the notes here. But it was a journalist that decided to download one of these pieces of software and just see, hey, you know, what's this like? And he went through this journey and he had his manager kind of chiming in, and they basically at the end of it said, you know what I did, and this is where I got the idea from, is one day I just put Google Docs up and I walked away, right? Because what a lot of the software does is take screen captures. So it's just like, oh, is that work relevant? Great, you're productive, right? And then lastly, just overall negative impact to productivity, because you may not have people, like I said before, interacting with one another as much, and they may also get burnout and stress, right? So if you get burnout and stress, people may call out. People may not be able to focus, right? So that could impact productivity. I'm going to talk about two really quick examples. I'm not going to go to great detail, but hopefully we can share the slides if people are interested. But I'm going to talk about two cases of where this actually can go wrong, right? So Early February of this year, a report came out about Barclays, where they were using an EMS vendor, and the employees found out that they were being monitored and no one had told them, right? So they were monitoring how long it took them to do things, and how long they were actually away from their desks. And this right now is a pending lawsuit facing, the organization is facing a potential $1 billion fine, right? We've also heard a lot about Amazon, and you know there are pros and cons for in both scenarios, right? And there are pros and cons for some of the software and technology and approaches that Amazon is trying to employ, especially in their warehouses. But there is that balance that you have to strike when every little thing that you're doing is being monitored, from how many steps it takes you to get from point A to point B, how long you spend, in one particular spot. It's this constant pressure of feeling like, oh my gosh, am I going to get dinged? Am I going to get a thinking futuristic world, right? You know, all of a sudden I'm going to get a little electrical shock. Oh, got to move, right? Kind of like my Fitbit, except it's a little less painful, right? So there's this idea that employees, it's like a mysterious productivity metric and algorithm, and quotes everywhere, you know, you find they feel like they're being treated like robots. So, and there are lawsuits underway, we have protests, right? So some of the negative impact is the bad publicity. We think about the employee brand, right? Now, Amazon's huge, right? But that doesn't mean that these types of things don't impact employees and they shouldn't be caring about the way in which it does. And if that wasn't bad enough, many of these vendors are not measuring things, the right things, or in the right way, or even things that actually matter. And so when you read through and you look at all these different vendors, many of them will say, oh, you know, we are able to show that by using the software, the X company saw 15% increase in productivity. And we've seen collaboration increase since, sharing scores with individuals, right? Well, the problem is, let's start with productivity, is most of these vendors are focusing on measures of time. So measuring quantity. How much time did I spend on that site versus that site? How much time did I sit in front of my computer? How long was I logged into the VPN? Because if you think about, we think back to, Frederick Taylor days, right? The number of widgets you produced, right? You had a quantity, in this case, it was a quantity of product, right? You had 10 widgets you needed to produce per hour, and if you produce 10 widgets per hour, bam, you were productive. Well, we don't really rely on widget building anymore. And in the end, what this does is build a false sense of complacency for organizations who are using the software. When they're seeing, oh, the productivity scores are increasing, really all they're showing is that employee utilization is going higher, but that doesn't mean the output is also, going higher as well. And so what we should be doing, when we think about measuring productivity, and we even look to these vendors, and some of them actually have ways you can customize so that you are focused on the things that actually matter. But if they don't, right, we shouldn't be using any analytics or analysis that's coming out of these tools to make decisions about how productive someone is or is not. Right? We need to emphasize the quality of the output. So let's think about it this way. I might be able to produce 100 toys, in 8 hours, and that makes me highly productive. But if none of them work, does it really matter that I created 100 toys? And then we need to start to think about how do networks affect pockets of productivity in the organization. So even if by being able to identify areas, like if we talk about quality, what you could talk about, then even you can talk quantity, but let's talk about things that really matter, like the number of patents created, the number of sprints completed, right? You can start to look at, with X amount of bugs left, right? There's lots of ways that we can start to look at quality by looking at quantity, right? And then we can look at, those areas that might be more productive and start to overlay network analysis on top of that and be able to better understand, well, what is it about one team or one division or one group of people that are able to be more productive than others? And you can start to learn from that behavior and use that to reinforce in other parts of the organization. And then we have collaboration, right? So there are a lot of vendors, and some of them I'm not going to name names, right? But I'm going to talk about them because they do this the wrong way, but there's still value, right? So what we do need to be careful of is that they're not actually measuring collaboration, right? They're measuring the frequency with which I might speak to people, or you might speak to people, or how many meetings I'm with a certain person. But that's not collaboration. That's just, hopefully communication. That's not the collaboration, because you don't know what the content of those meetings are. So, for example, if I've got a collaboration score that says, I'm going to Mary and I are meeting, and Mary's on top of mind right now. She's a good friend of mine who's actually home with COVID right now. So I'm just going to use Mary as an example for the rest of the talk. But if we think about, I'm in a lot of meetings with Mary, right? And that could mean many different things. It could mean Mary's my friend and I like being in meetings with her. It could be that Mary and I don't get along. We have completely different styles. We're not very good at communicating. And so we have to keep having the meetings to rehash things over and over and over again. Right? We don't understand the context, right? So really what a lot of the vendors are measuring is interaction, communication, but not necessarily what are we doing, right, in those sessions. And we're also, measuring simple digital exhaust in terms of, number of meetings, number of emails replied to, number of emails included in, right? That doesn't really tell you what you need to know, right, about collaboration. So again, I'm going to emphasize, emphasize focus on the quality and the outcomes of those meetings. So when Bob, when I myself and Mary meet on a regular basis, what are we producing, right? Are we making progress on a project? What is that, right? How effective is the interaction that we're having, right? So that's the quality and the outcomes of those interactions. And we really need to start thinking about, instead of measuring individual, this actually applies to the productivity too, instead of really focusing on measuring the individual level of productivity or the individual's collaboration score, which, by the way, I'm not a fan of giving people their scores. There are some ways it can be presented in a way that is very supportive and developmental, but most of the vendors right now just they don't have a handle on that, and the companies don't really know what to do with the data, how to coach employees and managers on how to use that data again for good and not evil. So you don't want things, you want people comparing their productivity scores. That's just not a good idea. So thinking about how do we measure, how do we look at a unit of measure that's at the team level where we can focus on quality as opposed to just at the individual level where we're focusing primarily on quantity or an amount of time spent doing something. So this is my last slide, but I want to leave everyone with this kind of this understanding, right, that the heart of every organization is social capital. And social capital is made up of trust. It is the norms of reciprocity that exist inside of an organization. It's those connections. It is not only the structure itself that matters, but how we as individuals fit within that structure. And so People Analytics has the opportunity through ONA and other means to help us as individuals understand how we sit inside of an organization and ways that we can become more connected to others or less isolated. And also how the organization as a whole can look at the network structures and the clustering and how different groups are connected and who the brokers are so that they can do a better job of managing the social capital, which in turn, again, my quote, right, which in turn will result in positive outcomes for the business. Thank you very much.
Really great stuff there. We had a question, and I have a few questions too. Let's jump into our Q&A. Can you see the Q&A at the bottom there?
Yes.
I don't know if you can click on that and read that question, because it is directed at you.
I feel like I'm at a job interview. So an example of an HR information governance strategy developed and executed. So I'm going to assume we're talking about HR data governance strategy, right? So I did work on a team that developed one when I was at Thomson Reuters about 7-8 years ago. We developed that team specifically because we were transitioning from PeopleSoft to Workday. So we said, what better time, right? So if you're thinking about, if you're going through an implementation or a change in systems, and it's always a good opportunity, it's the right time, right? What you think about, we've always done things this way. Well, now's the time to change that, right? So we use that as an opportunity to really take a look at what data we had, who had access to that data, developing rules and guidelines on who those people are, creating data stewards, embedded within the different business units, but also as part of the committee to look at, let's say, even one of the activities I worked on was mergers and acquisitions, right? So as we start to bring in new employees, when in Thomson Reuters time, very, well, they're Refinitiv now, but very, very heavy M&A, averaged 40 acquisitions a year, right? And so you imagine you're bringing in all these people, and with them comes data. So what we were finding was, historically what was happening was the HR person who was responsible for that overall, responsible for the integration and the whole deal, right, wasn't doing all the work they needed to do ahead of time to understand what kind of data do we have on these people, right? What's the quality? How does that map back to what we have in our systems? Do we need a new company code? Do we need the FEIN, right? Well, all these things, right, thinking about data. So that was like one of the work streams. So identifying different work streams where data, I mean, it's about data quality, data integrity, and data security. So hopefully that answers the question. I could keep going on, but I want to make sure we have time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like that was a little bit of a different question than what we were kind of talking about, but I think that the timing of your talk is perfect because I had, so we have the Talent Congress conference coming up October 20th through the 22nd. And by the way, you can go to talentcongress.com to register and see all the speakers. But one of our speakers, the head of talent acquisition, we're talking about the type of topics that she could speak on. And she said, what I would really, really like is, oftentimes when we're building a talent acquisition function or any function in a business unit, that we are often focused on the longevity and the future and how this will be carried out long term, right? So it's we want to implement this process and, in 5 years we'll take a look at it or what have you, or assess in a couple of years. And, she's like, in this particular time, we really need to adjust what we're doing. And then also, it's so uncertain, like we go back to that VUCA, the volatility and the uncertainty, and what were the other two? But the conversation.
Yeah, we look it up while you're talking.
Yeah, I think somebody actually, Frank, thank you, Frank, put it in the chat there what it was. But
thank you.
The ability to actually have a methodology that is almost an agile methodology where you are constantly changing as we move through this is going to be an essential quality and a way of doing things, especially in this time. And so I think like you were kind of really, you were talking about this now site when your first slide, and somebody had mentioned in the chat, they're like, what a great term, now site. Just the hindsight and the foresight, what have you, but like that focus on now, and that can be challenging. For some organizations to really kind of pivot to that, and I don't know if you've seen that kind of play out in different organizations.
So I think some of the emphasis in the now side, we've seen it from the continuous listening strategies, right? So, even if it's like a pulse survey, with one or two questions, right? But the problem is that even if you do emphasize trying to understand what people are thinking and feeling right now, you also have to do something about it right now, right? So the curse of surveys, right, and it is the fact that you do this survey, even if it's a short one, but we're all used to the long ones in our companies. If I don't see, what was the point, right? Every year I say X, right? Now, obviously I'm not the only one responding, right? But then when you see the responses in aggregate, and every year we say, oh, there's a lack of collaboration across the organization, yet why aren't things changing, right? So the challenge is, while we're continuously listening, we have to be continuously doing something, right? And it doesn't necessarily have to be the right thing, right? If we think about it in terms of product development, right? I just spent the last three or four years kind of embedded in a product development team, this idea of building an MVP, right? Your minimally viable product. It doesn't have to be perfect. It's about let's hear what people are saying. Let's think about how we can actually address some of this right now, as opposed to, okay, let's hear what people are thinking and let's go off and have focus groups and let's see what people think we should do and let's go back to leadership. And then, you know, now you're 6 months later and the now is gone, right?
Yeah, it is really kind of that continuous integration. I mean, you see it with tech teams when they're building product. It's that agile scrum. We're going to have sprints. We're going to meet together. We're going to integrate, like we're going to iterate, and then we're going to change if needed. And, you know, that can be a different sort of mindset for HR and talent acquisition teams, but something that they really kind of in this time need to embrace.
I have an
agile certification.
So I did some HR and agile and HR work. No, but I think you're spot on, right? What's interesting about the competencies, right? So what's interesting is none of this is new. So, maybe 10, 15 years ago, Ed Lawler and Alec Levinson out of USC Center for Effective Organizations did some work in a paper, and I think they were highlighting Capital One, if I remember. And they were highlighting the idea that it's not called change management, it's called managing change, right? And then developing this concept or approach where it's about also not only building the capability, but hiring for somebody. And again, we know about the growth and fixed mindset, but we'll move out of that. But more about the idea that no matter what somebody says in an interview, they're gonna say, I'm very comfortable with change. Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I can handle it, right? There's some people gonna be like, nope, not me, and I'm out of here, right? But most of the time, they're gonna tell you what you wanna hear. So I think there's more, that's where you have room for your behaviorally based interview questions, right? Tell me about a time where you had to change course quickly. What was it? How did you react to it? How did it make you feel? Like, we never talk about that side of it. We always just talk about the objective. Is there something you would do differently, right? So it's not just about how well did they respond to change in the past, but how well might they respond to the change in the past, in the future, based on, you know, being, having emotional IQ and kind of understanding and being self-aware.
You know, our previous guest last week was Anthony Ferreras from Nordstrom, and he spoke on just that, on hiring what he called rad, resilient, and professionals, especially in this time, and how you can actually ask those behavioral questions. If anybody wants to take a look at any of our previous shows, by the way, the Tech Recruit YouTube channel, one word, Tech Recruit, you can find this as well as all the other ones. But just a fascinating and just a resonating conversation on being able to identify, because when you're dealing with like this change and these volatile times, you know, you can have that flight or, you know, fight or flight sort of reaction to it. And when you have in companies, you know, having somebody who can adjust through those ups and downs and be resilient can be crucial for a company's survival.
Stacey, it's also having people in the organization that can also help other people adjust. And so it shouldn't be like this either or. You must be able to do this or you won't succeed here. It's also having people inside the organization who do not walk around going, guess what, this is how it is. Either you survive or you don't. Like, we need to be more social and support one another and be able to help, you know, especially as managers and leaders, be able to help our employees understand their role in the change, helping them, you know, just better understand, right, what they need to do and what they could be doing differently, as opposed to dinging you, right, because you freaked out because you had to change your product, you know, your product strategy overnight, and, you know, now you gotta pull an all-nighter, right? So there's gotta be a level of empathy that comes from leaders and managers too, because guess what? They're not perfect either, right? So,
yeah. You know, you had mentioned in your slides the networks, you know, in measuring productivity, these some networks within your organization being productive and how you can take a look at those versus individual people. And, you know, I wonder too, as you're thinking of these leaders as being able to pull people together, is that more of a leadership quality that is based on being a coach? Or, I mean, how do you assess that quality versus somebody who's a boss? Like the coach, like, hey, let me help you be productive. Let me help you succeed.
Yeah, so it's a combination of that, but it's also about bringing the right people together. It's about establishing the norms of how you're going to interact with one another. It is a coach role, but it's also the leader's role. And even if you've got self-organizing teams, right, being able to really understand the strengths and weaknesses of everybody and come together, right, to work on a shared outcome. Something you were saying, if we want to measure productivity in terms of innovation, right, we know from research that diverse networks, right, so diversity in general, right, actually can encourage what's called creative discord, right, which creativity is the precursor to novel and new ideas, which is what feeds into innovation. Right? And if you measure productivity in terms of innovation, right, so the more diverse your groups are, and we're not just talking about just gender and ethnicity, we're talking about different education, different experiences, maybe people with different backgrounds, like someone from finance is going to come in and you got someone from engineering. In fact, Amit Mohindra, when he was at McKesson running the workforce planning and analytics function, what he did was brilliant. And he started this team and he grabbed people from different departments. In fact, he had someone from finance, he had someone from marketing, an engineering individual. He had an economist, like I'm making some of these up, but he had people from all different areas. And that, to me, I call that the 360 degree lens, right? I'm in my hotel and there's like this lamp.
A cat.
Yeah, no, not a cat, just a lamp. So this 360 degree view of the subject, right? So. Even when, you know, I was an undergrad, so not many people know this, but my first 2 degrees had nothing whatsoever to do with HR and people analytics or IR psychology. I'm actually a member of Actors Equity, and I studied theater. I have a master's in musical theater, and I was a performer. And one of the things that I loved about my undergraduate education was only half of our classes were in our major. And the other half, we could take anything we wanted, but even in our core classes for our major, we were being taught the history, the politics, the religion, the art, everything that was happening in the world during that time. And I think the more that you can use that idea of all these different lenses coming together to look at a problem, the potential is enormous.
I like the term that you used, social networks. Wait, is that the term you used? The continuous listening, the social capital, that's what it was. I wrote that down, the human capital versus the social capital. I once heard this really great term and it just stuck with me, and it was about, and it's kind of on this whole idea between, like, you know, talent intelligence and like understanding your client, even like, you know, in marketing and doing external data analysis, that you are, if you can look at social networks and just you know, online social, you know, Facebook and LinkedIn, how people are communicating. If you can, as a company, capture all those conversations that are specific to, say, if you're Nike and you want to hear what everybody's saying about shoes, so you could develop the perfect shoe, right? Just that collective voice. And it's interesting to take that down to another tier of it just being internal, like the internal voice of your company when they're talking about, you know, on Slack or whatever those networks might be internally, or IM chats, that there's maybe, disruption or concern, and you can address those with these monitoring systems. But, you know, I think there's so many different layers with monitoring systems that I, for one, think that it's actually, I'm actually pro monitoring systems. And I feel like, you know, if you're given a computer and you have an your emails that are, you know, in your company, I mean, I just would assume that they're looking at that stuff, but maybe I just assume that, like, that they're monitoring all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
There's certainly ways where companies, if they may not be looking at your emails, they can notice the productivity maybe is down. Like after the first month you join, you're just like, oh, I love this job. I'm like super into it. And then after 3 months, you're answering your emails maybe really late at night versus like first thing in the morning. And that can maybe flag you as a flight risk, you know, like, oh, what's going on?
Or the complete opposite, right? That could be a flag that person is overworked, right? So that because they're, well, flight risk in the sense that they may burn out and have to quit, right? But it could also be something that's, rather than, again, if you're putting the lens of what something bad that might happen to the company, instead, let's think about how that software can identify something that bad that might happen to the person that might not keep them there. What can we do, right? So if we start us to notice, and I think, yeah, I absolutely agree. There are pros and cons. There's definitely benefits. It all depends upon what you're measuring and what you're using it for, whether or not you're letting employees know that they're doing what they're doing, and how you are aggregating data and sharing that back, right? So if you are, and there are, you know, I'll happy to share the slide I did, a quick overview of the market. And we kind of have, you know, if I look at my grid, I've got an X, Y of punitive to supportive, compliance to what's the other one? It's a spectrum of whether the focus is on compliance, so making sure people aren't visiting sites they're not supposed to visit. Yeah, then there are valid reasons, right? You know, there could be insider threat concerns. There could be you know, I accidentally download, you know, a virus to my company, right? That kind of monitoring is important, right? It has real value. But what we're seeing is a lot of the vendors in this space are really time tracking software that decided they wanted to relabel themselves to mock surveillance systems. And now they're relabeled themselves to productivity tracking software. And some of them will allow you to track time in a way that helps improve efficiency for the individual, because by tracking that time automatically, that can pre-populate, invoices, or, you know, if you're especially like legal or somewhere where you're, you know, consulting, right? Okay, you know, bam, I can hit the clock. Okay, great. Now that goes to that client, and that saves time, right? There's a really good purpose for that. But if you turn that around and say, you know, I mean, obviously billable hours are billable hours. We all know you have to do billable hours. But there are, if you turn some of that around and tell someone, hey, I noticed that you're not doing as many hours as this person over here, you can't make the assumption that because I spent less time in Outlook today, that I was less productive. And that's the problem, is the vendors are sugarcoating a lot of this. They're making it sound like the software is magical and can give you a read on everything that's happening in your organization. And in fact, it's actually, it may be monitoring and measuring the wrong things, and distracting you from really actually helping making sure that your employees have what they need.
I think you had mentioned, maybe it was on our previous conversation, this scale, and exactly everything you're saying is like the initial thing that somebody might think with these productivities is like, oh, we need to like step in, this person's a flight risk, or this person isn't being productive. But your conversations are very much on the side of, let's bring out what's best in this person. Let's be empathetic. Let's be able to coach them. Let's like help them be productive. Let's help them realign, and identifying maybe those things that keep employees engaged. That can be an important shift.
Yeah. There's a vendor that I had a chance to brief with about 3 or 4 weeks ago. They're based out of Israel. The name of the company is Cassiopeia. Definitely check them out. What they have done, and they started building the software 3 years ago. So they were building software for managers who have remote employees. And the idea wasn't about them being able to track, you know, are they spending, but it was more about providing coaching to that manager. Hey, did you know that you haven't had three one-on-ones with all of your direct reports this past quarter, and Mary only had one. You might want to schedule a one-on-one with her. right? So it's how do you help remote managers feel engaged with their team and feel like they're helping, right? Versus being, you know, behind a screen somewhere, having no idea, am I doing a good job or not? That is, and it may be measuring how much time you're spending in meetings, but what it, the messaging that it's sending back is, hey, on average, Mary is in meetings 7 out of 8 hours every day, while the rest of the team is only in meetings 4 hours every day. Maybe there's an opportunity for you to talk to Mary and reshift some of those priorities. Maybe there are meetings you can give to others on the team. So it isn't about the fact that Mary, you know, everyone else isn't spending as much time, or that Mary is spending too much time. It's about how do we help people, and how do you give insights to managers about how their employees are going about their day to help them be better managers.
You know, one of the questions in the Q&A was any recommendations on how to adjust expectations? I feel like you may have answered that. And it says, I don't know if you can see that in the Q&A.
Yeah.
And on how to adjust expectations as the workday is changing, as employees are literally balancing work, family, school in the same place every day and still be productive.
So I think it starts with, we have to redefine what productivity is, or we at least need to establish what does productivity mean, right? So we're throwing the term around and companies do it, and that's the problem too with the software, is that there are many of the vendors will give you a productivity score. One of the vendors that will presuppose that if you visit these sites, that's productive time. If you go these sites is unproductive time, but the manager can actually say, no, I don't think that's unproductive today, or that's right. So there's this level of subjectivity gets added on, which may not be consistent from employee to employee. And it's just making this judgment that you're going to take your time, you're going to put it into two buckets, right? Well, it's a spectrum. It's not, I was productive or I wasn't unproductive. It's like somewhere along there, but even so, they're just talking about time spent on, in Jira, time spent in Google Docs, not what we are doing. So I think the very first thing that has to happen for companies is we have, and I'm actually speaking in next week on this as well, about productivity. Just how do we need to think about productivity in a completely new, different lens? And I've shared some of that already, but it isn't going to happen overnight. And I think this is also an opportunity where people analytics could help dispel certain myths, right? So if we're able to start to measure the look at networks and measure how interactions and the outcomes that they have, right, we can show that is actually a picture of productivity. And guess what? They only spent, 20 hours doing that because they were together, the right people together, right? They were able to get what needed to get done. I do think that it's going to take some time, but by virtue of even this idea that most of us are working from home, where was I going with that?
Productivity. Networks.
I lost
network
it.
Productivity.
It's on productivity, but it's this idea of working from home. And I think companies are going to start to be surprised, right? They're going to start to see, wow, like look what they did, right? But they're going to see other areas. Like, we saw the story of, and I always say, triangulate your data, no matter what news story or article you hear, right? But also read those articles with what I call my critical HR thinking cap. So the article came out about JPMorgan Chase saying, okay, we're recalling all of our employees for a certain part of our business because productivity is down. But they didn't actually indicate what productivity was. How were they measuring that? How do you know, right? And if you're just talking about sales is, that's not the thing you should be, sales could be impacted by many, many other things. Like, maybe the fact that a lot of people aren't, shopping or right. There's other things going on. You have to think about the system, right? And so I think it's also, so it's redefining or even having a true understanding and definition of what productivity is, which is has to be customized depending upon what kind of job you have. Right? You can't use the same productivity measures and scores for a recruiter that you would for a benefits person or that you would for a developer, right?
The definition.
There are also financial measures that you could use to as a proxy for productivity. It's like revenue per employee or total. Total cost of revenue per, total cost of work, revenue per employee is the best one for productivity. So you could start to look at, or you could look at EBITDA per employee. That businesses care about, right? So, but if you can show that there's a correlation between people and, the financial output, right? There's your more quantitative, financial measure of productivity.
We're at top of the hour. This has been a fan. I know. I told you it went by really quick. You're like an hour. I'm like, it flies. Thank you, Michael Moon, so much for being a part of the show. We really appreciate it. And I believe we're going to see you at Talent Congress October 20th. Is that right?
I believe so.
Yeah. Day two is all talent intelligence and analytics and marketing efficiency. So we hope you'll join us. You can find information at talentcongress.com. If you want to see the replay of this show, you can find it on techrecruit.io, as well as all of our other shows, Dueling Sorcerers and the Talent Analytics Show. If anybody would like to get hold of you, Michael, how could they do that?
I'm on LinkedIn, and so just feel free to reach out to me there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, everybody. We'll see you next week. Have yourself a good one. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.